We're back here on the after the bye week edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke, Lance Meadow, no Giants game this past weekend, but a relatively full docket of NFL games, Lance. And we'll get into the Giants in a second, but quick takeaway from you from the games yesterday that you had a chance to watch.
Well, I did watch Cowboys-Redskins, considering it impacts this division, and it was a pretty sloppy game, I would say, for the most part, for both teams because of the weather conditions. And, you know, it seemed as if it was a game that Dallas probably should have been leading by 20 at one point because the Redskins were turning the ball over like crazy. They had five opportunities in the red zone, and I thought Washington's defense did a nice job containing the Cowboys, forcing Mike Nugent to kick field goals, and then ultimately they needed the late pick six to seal the contest.
And in fact, it was a Cowboys special teams play that changed the tenor of that game. The blocked field goal by Tyrone Crawford that ended up turning into a return all the way to the 5-yard line that turned into a touchdown. So a big turning point there. How much did you see of, I know it was on at the same time, so I didn't see a ton of it either, of Seahawks-Texans?
I was going back and forth between both games. I mean, what Deshaun Watson and the Texans were able to do, the Seahawks defense probably was the most impressive aspect of that game. We've seen Russell Wilson have success against a variety of defenses. So, I mean, that didn't necessarily show me anything new. But Watson, if you looked at the schedule, John, of who the Texans have gone up against, like anything else, you want to see what a rookie quarterback is going to do against a well-respected defense. And, you know, not many teams go into Seattle and score 30 points. Though I did look it up. In each of the last four seasons, one team has gone into Seattle and has at least scored 30 points against that defense. But they were getting a lot of explosive plays, and that's not something that Seattle has been known to give up. I mean, he was hitting Will Fuller deep down the field. He connected with DeAndre Hopkins. They were running the ball with Lamar Miller. It was unfortunate that they weren't able to close the door. I think part of it was, you know, teams, they're more worried about milking the clock. How many times have we seen this, right? As opposed to putting their foot on the pedal to close out a game. And I think Bill O'Brien and company weren't as aggressive as they could have been on that final possession before Seattle took over and ultimately went ahead.
What if I told you before the season that of quarterbacks with a significant number of attempts, the two quarterbacks with the highest average yard per completion, I think that's completion or is it attempt? Well, either one. Either highest average yards per completion or attempt, the two top guys in the league would be Alex Smith and Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. I mean, Smith,
a rookie, and check down Alex.
Correct, exactly. But the thing is, I think Alex Smith has taken a step forward this year. They've allowed him to move down the field a bit more. They've opened up the offense. So that's not necessarily as surprising as I think Deshaun Watson is.
Because, well, I mean, I mean, Smith is surprising, though, given this past history in terms of not going down the field.
But I guess I have always looked at him, and I've respected his game. I think he's very good at handling the football, protecting the football. I just don't think his numbers have ever jumped off the page, to your point.
Well, because he's going down the field now. He wasn't before.
Well, and I think he also has some playmakers around him that even off a short pass can make a big play,
that's
like a Kareem Hunt, like a Tyreek Hill, which he didn't necessarily have around him in years past. So that, I think, has been a difference.
But you're right, the Watson is a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, the way that he has stepped in, and remember, I mean, he hasn't even started every game. Tom Savage was under center to start the season, and then, you know, Bill O'Brien decided to go in a different direction. It's really transformed the Texans' offense. This is nothing new. I mean, we've seen some rookies come out of nowhere. Look at what Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz did last year. I think they both had respectable numbers when you look over the course of a 16-game season. But not only is Deshaun Watson putting up respectable numbers, John, it's translating to wins. And that's impressive. And the Texans, you know, let's not overlook the fact they're in a division that is very winnable. It's an extremely wide-open division. The Jaguars have been doing well. Tennessee's still very much in the mix. But, you know, Houston, if they could get their act together on defense, and I think they're, you know, hurting, obviously, with the loss of J.J. Watt and a few other players on the defensive line, they're certainly going to be in a position to compete and win that championship.
And, Lance, this NFC playoff picture is going to be very interesting this year. As of now, you have all division leaders are within at least two games in the loss column away from the next team after them. So, or rather, at most two games up on the team right behind them. The Cowboys and the Eagles have the biggest difference between them, with the Eagles at 7-1 and the Cowboys at 4-3.
And they haven't played each other yet.
That was going to be my next point. So that obviously is still very much in flux. In the North, the Vikings are 6-2. The Packers are 4-3. Of course, they don't have Aaron Rodgers now. Perhaps for the rest of the year, we'll see. And then the Lions are at 3-4 after that loss last night. So just two games separating the Lions and Vikings there. One if you want to count the Packers with their injury. The Saints 5-2. The Panthers 5-3. Just a half game there. And the Seahawks and Rams both tied at 5-2. So the wild card is going to be very, very tight. Only one game separates a bunch of teams for the wild card. And then, of course, the divisions, it looks like many of them will go down to the wire as well.
Well, I think this stat probably tells it all. Coming in, I was reading the fact that if the playoffs were to start today, eight teams that made the postseason last year would not be in. And we're right around the midway point of the season.
Eight?
Yes.
So eight out of the 12 teams.
Eight, correct. AFC and NFC combined. I'm not just looking at the NFC.
That's interesting.
I think that says a lot. I think it says a lot about the parity of the NFL, which we talk about constantly. It also just goes to show you when you play a lot of close games, and this is more relevant to the Giants than perhaps any of the other teams that we were talking, a season can flip very quickly
right. When
you don't find ways to close out those close games from one year to the other.
We're going to play a game quick. Who are the four teams that would be in this year that were also in last year? I have them. You tell me which ones you think they are.
Let's see here.
One's easy.
Well, let me look at the list. I'm not looking at the standings terms of
– I'll guide you. There's only one team in the NFC. Which team is it?
That made the playoffs last year that is going to go back this
year. Yes, correct.
If it were to
start. If it started today.
That would be the Seahawks.
Correct. And there were three teams in the AFC. And you will not – these are also not surprising teams.
Well, the Patriots clearly are one.
Yep.
Steelers are two.
Yep.
And three would be Kansas City.
Correct. You got it. Well, you cheated.
I just looked at the list. I'm not looking at last year's standings. It's visually, it's easier. Well, it's easier to just see all the teams in front of you. So.
I'm not about making it easy for Lance Meadow. I'm about challenging
it. Wasn't
Lance
as if
Meadow.
I was looking at the 16 standings.
Yeah, I'm aware. Look, the league is really tight. Even the AFC, these divisions are all pretty close. The Bills, believe it or not, are just a half game back of the Patriots. I don't think a lot of people noticed that. They had a great win against the Raiders yesterday and really dominated them from start to finish in that
game. Four takeaways. Derek Carr turned the ball over a lot. Running backs were fumbling the football. And Buffalo's defense has been very respectable this season.
And LeSean McCoy ran the hell out of the football.
He did. So you combine those two things. You play good defense. You take away the football. You run the football. It's not brain surgery. I think most teams are going to win football games that way.
Yeah, the AFC South is a lot of fun, too. I mean, the Titans, Jaguars, and Texans are all within one game of each other. The Colts, obviously, at 2-6 without Andrew Luck. And if I were them, by the way, I would not bring him back unless you know that he's 100% cleared. It's throwing shoulder. Let the man rest. And then tonight you got the Broncos and the Chiefs. And right now, the AFC West, what we thought would be a really good division is turning out to be a division that I think is beating each other up a little bit, and I think we're seeing that in the NFC East as well. 5-2 for the Chiefs, and then just 3-3 for Denver, 3-5 for the Chargers, and 3-5 for Oakland. So tight there too.
Well, it's more of a reason. I think this division is the perfect example why you can't judge a team after just three games into the season. Because I mean, look at this division. If you further break it down, John, the Chiefs started off 5-0, right? And have since lost two straight. The Broncos were off to a 3-1 start. They've lost two in a row. They lost to the Giants, and they lost to the Chargers.
And scored a combined 10 points in those two games? How many did they score against the Giants?
They scored 10 against
the
Giants.
So 10, and they got shut out last week.
They got shut out, correct, 21-0.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Two teams that were also at the bottom of the rankings in terms of the Chargers and the Giants.
Right.
Okay, so the Chargers have regrouped a little. You know, they have won a few games, close games. They found a way to win. And the Raiders
lost to the Patriots yesterday.
They did, but a close game, I mean, in terms of down the stretch. And then the Raiders started off 2-0. Derek Carr gets hurt. E.J. Manuel comes in. They lose a string of games. They regroup. And then all of a sudden, they have another setback with Buffalo.
A lot of people thought the Raiders might take a step back this year, and I think it looked like that's happened. The defense hasn't taken that next step you would have liked.
Yeah.
And again, some of the turnovers on offense. And here's a question for you. Do you think the Patriots have kind of figured out what ails their defense a little bit? It's two straight games, and they've done a pretty good job. And the Chargers have a pretty good offense now, and they did a really good job. Phillip Rivers didn't even have 200 yards passing.
The one thing I will say, and I watched a good portion of that game, for the majority of the first half, the plays were so lopsided. I'm not trying to take away credit from the Patriots' defense.
What do you mean the plays were so lopsided?
Meaning New England ran at one point like 40 plays in the first
half.
Time
of possession, you mean.
Chargers had about 14. So is that a reflection of the defense stopping them, or is that just a reflection of the offense putting together lengthy drives? So I still would like to see, to answer your question, a little bit more out of the Patriots defense. I agree with you. It can't be overlooked what they did against Atlanta and what they did against the Chargers. But if I recall, going back to that Sunday night game against the Falcons, New England's offense also dominated time of possession. So I think the offense has come a little bit forward in terms of helping out the defense in that regard.
I think that's a fair point. Your calls, by the way, at 201-939-4513. Ben McAdoo will be addressing the media any moment. As soon as he does, we will have that for you. This from Paul Dottino, who was watching practice. A couple things to note. This is from Mr. Dottino. Richburg, Goodson, Cappy not working in media portion. Vernon Pugh lightly jogging. Don't see Apple or Jenkins. Shepard is working. So we will see whether or not we have an extra report on those guys from Ben McAdoo when he addresses the media. Dottino's on. He said he will text me any pertinent news
as soon as
I have it, and I do have my phone, so that'll be helpful. And we will move from there. Lance, I want to go through over a couple statistical things with the Giants. So I was doing some work today.
That's always dangerous.
On trying to figure out, you know, kind of why the Giants are where they are. And, you know, I dug really deep here. I looked at, like, average first down yardage, second down in distance. A lot of really deep things, and I was hoping to come up with stuff that was, like, super unique and really interesting, and not really.
It fell flat.
I mean, I came up with some basics that I think we already knew. The three things that I picked out that were really, really, I think, signs of why the Giants have struggled this year were simple. Third downs on both sides, the differential. 29th in the league in terms of third downs. Trying to convert. So that's really, really poor on the offensive side of the ball. And then defensively, we've talked about their struggles on third down over the course of the year, too. That's nothing new. Near the bottom of the league in terms of third down defense. So that's one thing that stuck out at me. Number two that stuck out at me is big plays. Giants 31st in the NFL in terms of pass plays of 20 yards or more. 26th defensively in terms of allowing pass plays of 20 yards or more.
Double-edged sword.
So it's hard to win games when you're not making big plays yourself and your opponent is making big plays. And then the third thing I came up with was it's kind of a dual stat, and that's time of possession. The Giants are allowing teams to control the ball for 32 minutes in the game, which is a problem. And it goes back, Lance, quite frankly, to three and outs. Defensively, the Giants are 23rd in the league in terms of holding opponents to three and outs. And offensively, the Giants over the course of the year, if I can find the correctly highlighted portion, are 29th in the league in terms of number of three and outs on offense. So no big plays, struggles on third downs, which leads to lots of three and outs. Same thing on defense. You're not holding people on third down, so you're not getting three and outs, leading to a problem of time of possession. And if you're not converting third downs, you're not making big plays, you're not sustaining long drives, and the opposite's happening on defense, you're going to have trouble winning football games. And it's really that simple.
Well, to sum up what you said, so you're not staying on the field on offense.
Nope.
And you're not getting off the field on defense.
Yeah, problem.
Essentially.
Problem.
That's pretty much what you laid out. And tied into your point about third down, specifically on defense, is the running defense this season compared to last year. I mean, if you look at... Now, average yardage per carry may not be overwhelming, but I think when you look at how the Giants held opponents to under 100 yards consistently all of last season, 11 out of the 17 games, the Giants held their opponents to under 100 yards. Out of the first seven games this season, six opponents have passed the century mark. And that's a huge difference between 2016 and 2017, and when you allow the opposition to run the football, in all likelihood, John, to your point, that means they're facing manageable third downs, they're converting those third downs, they're putting together lengthy drives, and your defense is not getting off the field. And that's how all of a sudden time of possession is out of whack, your offense is not putting together lengthy drives. All of these factors that you essentially outline, they all go hand in hand. We talk about all of these numbers, but they're connected in so many different ways.
They are all connected. Yeah. And the one thing that can make up for those failures is big plays. and making that big 80-yard touchdown, having the big run, having the big run and catch, or a special teams touchdown, whatever the case might be. And that goes down to another thing. So the Giants' average starting field position is 27th in the league in terms of where the opponent's starting on the field.
Just out of curiosity, do you have the opposition? Because they can't be that high in that
regard.
Oh,
no, correct.
Too.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was referencing. The opposition field position is the 29-yard line, which is not good. If I could find the Giants' average starting field position here, I did not highlight that. So maybe it was not
one of the ones that jumped out. Maybe they're middle
of
the pack.
Yeah, they might be
like
middle
that.
Of the pack in terms of offensive field position. I'll try to find that. But again, it's big plays that can solve that. And the other thing that can solve those problems, Lance, is takeaways. And the Giants right now, and I think this, I would probably consider this disconcerting. If you start a season 1-6, you would like to think that, well, one of the reasons the team starts 1-6, right, is because, well, maybe we have, they were 9-8 in turnover ratio. We've had a lot of fumbles, or we've thrown interceptions, or there's defensive touchdowns. Well, the Giants are actually neutral right now in terms of takeaway giveaways. They have just 7 giveaways, which is an excellent number. In fact, there's only, and I'll count them for you, 3 teams that have fewer giveaways than the Giants: the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Patriots. And no surprise, those 3 teams all lead their division.
But, well, the one thing, I didn't mean to interrupt you, the Bills, though, notice, they may be in the same ballpark in terms of giveaways, but the Bills are plus 14 in turnover
differential. Well, now you get to my next point.
So,
the Giants just have 7 takeaways. So,
while
only 3 teams have fewer giveaways, how many teams do you think have fewer takeaways than the Giants, Lance?
Fewer takeaways? Yes. I would say not many.
How many do you think?
I would think that if you look at the league, I don't know, 7 or 8?
5.
Okay.
Just 5 teams have fewer takeaways. The Falcons, the Raiders, the Broncos, the Bengals, Dolphins, and 2 other teams have 7 along with the Giants.
And interesting, most of those teams are 500 or hovering around 500.
Or worse.
Yeah, or started off good and then all of a sudden dip because they're not being opportunistic. Now, if you want to take this further, I brought up my chart from 16 just to see where the Giants were at after 7 games last year. In terms of takeaways.
And what was their record after 7 games? Which was also
the
bye.
4-3 last year.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Okay, because that was right after the Rams game in London where they started to put together the winning streak. So takeaways, in terms of total, after 7 games last year, they just had 3 takeaways. So they actually have 4 more takeaways in the first 7 games than they did at this point last year. I take that back. I'm sorry. The 4 from the Rams game,
that's
7.
Count.
So 7 equivalent. Okay.
Correct.
Stand corrected. So they're equal to where they were. But look at the turnovers. The turnovers through the first 7 games, 9, 10, 13, 14. They had 14 turnovers at this point last year through 7 games.
And that's when we were at Dubai last week, we're like, guys, look. The team, you might not be happy with the 4-3 record here, but they're minus 7 in the turnover ratio. They've managed win 4 out of 7 games despite being minus 7 through just 7 games. That's a big deal. The fact that they're neutral at 0 and still 1-6, I think that's a cause for concern. Because if you look at some of the teams with some of the poor records, Lance, it's telling. The Browns, minus 12. The Niners, minus 3. The Bengals, minus 10. Oakland at 3-5, minus 6. The Bears, minus 4. Now, there are some teams in here, like the Giants, who have overcome some issues. Like, I bet you'd be surprised to know that the Panthers are minus 7 this year. But they're 5-3. Because the defense has done a really good job, and I think probably bailed the offense out of a lot of those takeaways. But, guys, there's no surprise. Look at the teams at the top of this list in terms of turnover differential. Buffalo plus 14, Jacksonville plus 8, Kansas City plus 7, Seattle plus 6, Philly plus 5. And now you have some outliers in there. Detroit's plus 7 and Baltimore's plus 5. But, you know, the Patriots are plus 4, the Saints are plus 4, the Packers are plus 4, the Vikings are plus 2, Dallas is plus 2. What are all these teams? They're opening records.
Yeah, and in the mix for their divisions, too, which is the other trend. Just out of curiosity, who else, is there another team that's neutral like the Giants?
There are 2 other teams that are neutral.
Which are the 2 teams, just to get an idea of where they stand in the league?
Well, actually, no. Yeah, 2 other teams. The Los Angeles Rams, who are 5-2.
They're playing.
and the Tennessee Titans, who I believe are 4-3, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I think they are 4-3. Let's take a look here in terms of the standings.
Yep, 4-3.
4-3, okay.
And they're tied with the Jaguars. So by the way, a couple other teams around there, the Chargers plus one, they're 3-5. Houston minus one, they're 3-4. The Jets minus one, they're 3-5. Is that correct?
Yes, Jets are 3-5.
Pittsburgh minus one, they happen to have a better record. So, guys, look, turnovers and takeaways, a lot of it is luck and good fortune and things like that. We get that. We say that all the time, but it matters. They matter.
Well, because like you alluded to, it covers up issues. So, for example, if you're not getting off the field on third down, well, if you're plus five in turnover differential, it means that you probably took the ball away, and it's okay if you give up some lengthy drives. Just like time of possession, you could be losing in time of possession, but if you hit two or three 80-yard touchdowns over the course of a game, what difference does time of possession mean? Because time of possession only makes sense if you're translating that to points. If you win the time of possession battle, all you did was walk away with two or three field goals over the course of a game, you wind up losing perhaps 10-9. So it's all about what you do with those opportunities, what you do with takeaways, what you do with lengthy drives, and takeaways can cover up issues in those departments. So the problem is the Giants are having issues in time of possession, they're having issues in big plays, and they're not taking the ball away. So you can't cover it up with being an opportunistic defense, and that's been the problem.
All right, here we go from Mr. Dottino. A couple notes here from the press conference before we get to your phone calls. We see we have a couple folks on the line at 201-939-4513. If you want to get in, folks, we do have a couple open lines. A couple guys excused for personal reasons, Jack Rabbit, Paul Perkins, Eli Apple, all three are expected back Wednesday, so no injuries concerns there. McAdoo, when asked about Reese's team, bought into the hype comment from last Wednesday. And I guess we could talk about some of the Jerry Reese stuff as well. We even talked about that on the show. He said, everything falls on my shoulders. So the coach taking responsibility for that the same way Jerry Reese took responsibility for the team's record last Wednesday. McAdoo also said, I want to flush the first half of the season, have a fresh start. And he confirmed that Vernon, Richburg, and Pugh were all out today at practice. Remember, Pugh had that back issue
in that last game.
So let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. Anything you want to talk about, folks, the Giants around the league, you name it, we got it. Drew in Virginia, he joins us next. Hi, Drew.
Hey, Lance. Hey, John. How you guys doing?
Good to hear from you, buddy. How are you? Long time no speak.
Yeah, it's been a minute, man. I don't listen to the show and calling like I used to. Hey, I just called into that. I saw you guys were on. Hey,
appreciate that.
That's the truth. I think you have a larger following than even you want to admit, but that's cool.
Well, we appreciate that.
Don't worry, Drew. Trust me. Lance is not one to be humble, so he thinks he has a huge following.
Yes. Right after the show, I'll analyze our numbers. But what do you have for us today, Drew?
You know, really, I don't have, you know, I guess much of anything. But, you know, I saw the Jerry Reese press conference, I think it was last week.
Yes, it was.
And, he said it all, I guess, but honestly, you know, and most of the fans just basically feel like, you know, obviously this is on his shoulders. He's the one who went out there and picked the players. I understand players have to play. I get all of that. I promise you. I think we all get that. But at the end of the day, man, you're the one who drafting these players, and a lot of this isn't showing up. And let's not forget one other, you know, let's not forget that, you know, we was having some of these woes even under Coughlin. So it's not all of McAdoo's, you know, doing too. You can only play with what you have. So,
Hey, Drew, I think based on what Jerry said last week, I think really what he said was right on the money. Yes, obviously you're right. A lot of it has to do with the roster, and that's the first thing he started with. I'll read the quote for the folks that didn't hear it, and this is me quoting Jerry Reese from last Wednesday. I'll start with, we're 1-6. It's not where we want to be, but this is where we are. This roster, it's my roster. I'm responsible for everybody on the roster, and I'll take ownership of where we are right now with this 1-6 start. But I think you're right too, Drew, in that, and Jerry Reese said in his next sentence, I do believe that we still have good players in this roster, and there are some good players in the roster. And I think when a lot of people, and I kind of tried to take stock of this in the bye week, a lot of people would ask me, you know, John, what do you think's wrong with the team? What's going on? And, you know, you bring up obviously the issues now with the offense and the injuries of wide receiver and Beckham. But there were issues before then, obviously. And I think you get back to the plain fact that guys, especially in my opinion, the defensive side of the ball, did not play as well in the first seven games this year as they did last season. Now, trying to pin down a reason for that, I think, is a little bit tougher. You know, Jerry Reese said that maybe he thought the players bought into the hype last year a little bit about them being so good, and maybe they didn't quite have the hunger this year that they had last year. They're playing hard, but it, you know, they didn't have the same intensity, the same fire. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe for some of these guys, it's a regression to a mean. You're not going to have a career year every year. It's just kind of the way things go. Maybe it's a combination of the two. It's tough to pin down, but I do think those two things together, with the guys that played really well last year not doing as well this year, along with the roster in general, as Jerry Reese pointed out last week, I think you put all that together. And of course, you know, the coaches in the mix there too, trying to get as much out of these players as possible. There is blame to go along to every level of the organization. Jerry Reese said that it's a team effort. Nobody escapes blame. Ben McAdoo knows it's on him. The players know it's on him. Jerry Reese knows it's on him. Everybody knows that ever has a role in the Giants being 1-6.
Yeah, and John, and you know, for me, going back to something you said earlier, I would probably look at a regression to the mean. I mean, you know, yeah, we have, you know, we played well last year and everything else, but, you know, again, let's look at this defense. You know, if you look at it over the years, you know, we've been scattered a little bit. That said, I will want to go this. The other side of that ball for me, honestly, is the offensive line. And I'm not going to take too much time, because I know you got all the callers, but I will say that that's what it comes down to. And, you know, Steve from D.C. called in, and I want to give a shout-out to him for what he said, because I absolutely agree with him, Matt, from the standpoint that, you know, I don't know how you don't know this offensive line has problems. And it was kind of funny, because I want to say it was the game during the it was a game that Troy Aikman was broadcasting, and I'm not a – huge Troy Aikman fan by any stretch of the imagination. Trust me when I say that.
Shocking.
But I do agree with that 1,000%, what he said when he said that, you know, Jerry Reese knew this offensive line had problems, and yet he went out and did nothing about it with regards to picking up any players. And I'm going to say this, that last thing I'm going to go. Everybody was asking me all over the summer, and I swear for God, John, everybody was asking me, oh, man, you know, you guys picked up Brandon Marshall. You picked up Evan Ingram. Oh, you're going to be flying. You guys going to be killing it. And I swear my response always has been that, yeah, that's nice, but we ain't do nothing for the offensive line. Now, I went and got a haircut last week, and the first thing my barber said is, man, you've been telling us about that offensive line. Yeah, because we know the problem is the offensive line. And lastly, I'm going to say this. Jerry Reese or management or whoever you want to say, they are killing Eli and his career, because how in God's green creation you don't give him a offensive line? Eli is not getting any faster. He wasn't a mobile quarterback when he came in the league. He didn't suddenly get any faster. Fix the line. That if you give Eli time, he will pick you apart, and they could overcome the defense. Fix the line. That's all I want to say, guys.
Thank you, Drew.
Appreciate the phone call. I think that the offensive line made strides in run blocking right before the bye, but clearly, you know, pass protection has been up and down. He certainly took his fair share of hits and sacks in the game right before the bye against the Seattle Seahawks, and that's why the second half was so lopsided. And, I mean, it's not unique to the Giants. I mean, you could see it as a trend across the league, John. Teams that have an overwhelming amount of talent but don't win the battles in the trenches on both sides are going to struggle. I remember Joe Flacco, you know, helping the team win the Super Bowl. And then if you look at what happened right after the Super Bowl, Ray Rice was not running the ball effectively, and Flacco wasn't getting pass protection. As a result, the Ravens took a significant step back. Ryan Tannehill, when he was healthy, his numbers have fluctuated as a result of the Dolphins' offensive line play. There are so many quarterbacks that we can go through across the league, and offensive line play is not the sole reason, but it's certainly a big part of the equation as to why an offense is struggling or not. One of the other things that I wanted to touch on that Drew brought up is, and I've said this on numerous occasions, when you go back to last season, John, The defense was solid. I don't think we need to debate that. I think they were respectable. Whether the Giants were playing close games or not, the defense was respectable. You always felt...
And I think better than respectable. I think they were a very good defense. I think it's fair to say that.
The numbers, I think, showcase that. And then I think whether you're invested in the team or not, if you were just a spectator watching the Giants' defense, you felt going into that game, they'd have a chance because the defense wasn't going to be beat with big plays. They were going to keep them into it. What I think may have been overlooked, and I'm going to continue to emphasize this, is how many close games, even with the defense being better than respectable, John, the team played. And what I mean by that is how much stock or substance do you put into the 11-5 record?
Well, they went, 8-3 in games decided by one possession.
I don't have
correct?
The numbers in front of me. I believe that's correct. Yes. So, and it's not to take away from the record last year. My point is, when you look at a record, and we do this more often than not, you then have to look, okay, well, how'd they get the 11 wins? Were they beating everybody by 20 points? Were they dominating? Were the 11 victories showcasing a team that had an immense amount of separation between them and the opposition? Or was this the type of team that, down to the wire, needing a defensive stop, needing a go-ahead field goal? And that's what the Giants were last season. The Giants were an 11-win team that found ways to win games in a variety of different ways.
And how many times did that Giants defense go on the field at the end of these games and have to make a stop? And they
did it so
many times. And I think this gets back to a point, Lance. You take a look at the playoff teams last year, right? Of the 12 teams that made the postseason, okay? Where do you think the Giants ranked in terms of point differential? Plus minus of the 12 teams that made it.
Of the 12, I would say that they probably were 9th or 10th.
They were 9th. You're exactly right. And the teams that were worse than them should not come as a surprise to anybody. The Dolphins,
okay.
The Lions, and then the Texans, the team that
I agree.
Won
no
that
surprise
NFC safe bounce by default. They were plus 26. So for a team to be 11-5 and just be plus 26 speaks to your point of the number of close games the Giants won. Just to give an example of a couple other teams. Last year, the Steelers went 11-5. They were plus 72. The Seahawks, rather, went 10-5-1. They were plus 62. The Chiefs went 12-4, plus 78.
Huge disparities here.
The Raiders, by the way, and what's their record this year? 3-5. They went 12-4 last year. They were just plus 31.
So that could be a reflection as to why things have
regression
flipped
to the mean.
Correct.
The
exactly.
Cowboys 13-3. They were plus 115 last year. The Falcons were 11-5.
I was going to ask what Atlanta
they were
was.
Plus 134.
So the Giants were plus 26 and the Falcons were plus 134.
Same record.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you can't just look at a record in the National Football League. You have to go beyond the numbers, and that's why I revisit the 11 wins last year. It's not saying the team wasn't good from a defensive perspective.
Right.
We know the offense had its ups and downs last season. Nobody's necessarily trying to revisit that or make sense of that. That was well documented. But if you go back to the 11 wins, I mean, even taking it a step further, John, the Baltimore game, when they started their winning streak last year, right after they lost to Green Bay, which was week 5. So they come home October 16th. Now all of a sudden the record starts to turn. They were a 4-3 team. They beat Baltimore 27-23. That game was tight. Odell Beckham had the two breakaway touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's the difference in the game right there. And then if you remember, you know, Flacco even has an opportunity late in the game to make things interesting. The Giants make a defensive stop. Okay. So then they go to London. They win that game 17-10. Landon Collins has the pick 6. Rashad Jennings gets the go-ahead touchdown late in that game. And then Case Keenum and the Rams are driving down the field, and Keenum is intercepted by DRC in the left corner of the end zone because he overthrows a wide receiver.
One of many fourth-quarter turnovers from Case Keenum, by the
way. No doubt. But the point is, the Rams are in the red zone, John.
Yeah.
If the ball bounces a different way, I don't know. Maybe we're talking overtime. Then you go to the bye, they come back, they host Philadelphia. They won that game 28-23. What I remember from that game is the Giants having a late turnover. I think Jordan Hicks got the interception off Eli Manning. Carson Wentz takes over. Eagles have an opportunity for the go-ahead touchdown. He's aiming for Jordan Matthews in the right corner of the end zone, and the Giants are able to knock the ball away. That seals that game. The following week, they beat the Bengals by 1 point, 21-20. The Giants get the ball late in that game. Rashad Jennings and company run a four-minute offense. He got a key first down. They were able to run out the clock, so the Bengals didn't really get a last-second possession. Five-point victory, one-point victory. Okay, now they host the Bears. This was the end of three straight home games. They beat the Bears by 6 points. Jay Cutler has the Bears driving down the field. He throws a late interception to close that game out. And then sizable victory in Cleveland. Probably could have been even worse if Odell Beckham didn't have those two return touchdowns called back because of penalties. But we're talking about a string of one, two, three, four, five straight victories from week six through week 11, where the largest margin of victory, John, was 7 points. And all of those games, I remember them like they were yesterday, as I was describing. We're talking about last possession, defense or offense having to make a stop.
And
of some sense.
First game of the year against Dallas.
That'd be another good example.
Terrence Williams not getting out of bounds.
Correct. The Saints game, Victor Cruz gets the third down conversion to continue to milk the clock. That's another one. And then if you want to see what happened late in the season, I mean, the Dallas game with the Giants was just grinded out. Odell Beckham had the big touchdown.
But they were trailing that game in the fourth quarter.
That's true. They were. And they were down. The Cowboys, if I remember, scored early. They got up 7-0. And then Dallas didn't do anything the rest of the game. So that's another close one. The Lions game was contested, but they were able to at least win that one by 11. And the Washington game was real ugly for the Redskins.
And again, in the same way, Lance, they did lose some close ones, too. They lost the game to the Redskins 29-27. That was a game that they certainly could have won earlier
Absolutely.
In the year. They lost a close game to the Packers 23-16. It was only a one-score game.
That's fair.
So they had close losses, too, obviously, but they won a lot more of the close games than they
correct.
Lost.
The majority turned out to be victories.
And look, generally, if you want to look at it, it's a 50-50 proposition, right? If it's a one-score game, it's a 50-50 shot, win or lose, give or take. And the 2 years ago, the Giants lost most of their
in
close
15.
Games.
Yeah.
Last year, they won most of their close games. And again, that's not to take anything away from last year's team. They made the plays they had to make when they had to make them. But it's hard to continually make those plays in those close games year in, year out without there being some regression to the mean, the same expression I used before.
Well, especially when, as you mentioned, the point differential.
Right.
I mean, if we probably look back in 14 and 15 – I mean, it's probably very rare that the Giants have had an overwhelming point differential in their favor, John. So when you're hovering around plus 20, plus 25, it's very easy for, as we just went over, the record to flip-flop. As opposed to when you're a team every season and you're plus 75, you're plus 100, or you're plus 65, highly unlikely that you're going to take a flip-flop so quickly. But when you're winning games by small margins, if you look at other teams, I'm sure if we did a study of other teams that are around the Giants' ballpark and point differential, you'd probably see seasons also that go back and forth.
For example, just to give you an example, we mentioned the Giants were plus 26 last year and went 11-5, right? They went 6-10 the year before. They were just minus 22.
Which is the flip-flop theme.
But that's
that we're
only
talking about.
A 48-point difference.
Yeah.
Remember, the Falcons scored 100 more plus minus in them last year. The teams had the same record. So a 40-point flip-flop plus minus, 40 points, that's it, okay? You went from plus 20 to minus 20. That's it. It's not that big. You have one blowout. That's,
that could be
that's
the
it.
Difference in the season.
That's
yeah.
it. That went from 6-10 to 11-5. It's a very narrow margin. I got a couple other things here, too, but I want to get back to your calls first at 201-939-4513. Robert's down in Miami. Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm great. Well, I've been listening to you guys for a long time, and you guys are wonderful, and I've been a Giant fan since the days of Y.A. Tittle. So.
Go way back. Well, we appreciate you tuning in. Thanks so much.
Yeah, way back. But, you know, what I like to say is that, you know, I'm not big into statistics, you know, but it's everything that I've noticed about the Giants this year in particular has been observational, and it's been right from the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And it all boils down to basically blocking and tackling, you know, the basics. When you look at why we give up so many big plays, it's because the other quarterback has like a ton of time to throw the ball, why our yards per pass attempt is so low is that Eli has to get rid of the ball in a second and a half. So how far down the field could you go?
That's fair.
So and then when it comes to statistics, you know, I'd like to see what the statistics are for yards after contact.
Well, Robert, I do have that for you. The Giants have given up the seventh most yards after contact on defense in the league this year.
Okay.
So that's a lot.
Right from the beginning, it boils down to what Jerry Reese was actually talking about. It seems simplistic, but, you know, breaking tackles or making the tackle is a wanted issue. Not anything other than, you know, how much giving that last extra effort and where you fight for every inch. I can remember so many plays going back to the beginning of the year where, you know, we would catch the ball and get tackled right away. You know, Shepard couldn't give you that last extra inch to reach the ball over the goal line. And when the other team needed that extra yard or 2 yards or 3 yards, they were breaking tackles, just gaining enough yardage so you could kick a 61-yard field goal by the Eagles rather than
the Alshon Jeffrey play.
Yeah, well, Robert, you know what? Robert, you want to talk about inches. I'm going to give you something real simple that I think defines it real easy. The Giants are last in the NFL this year on offense, converting third and ones. The league average on third and ones is 67%. The Giants are converting 37% of their third and ones offensively. And I'm going to flip the script for you. How about this little double entendre? On defense, the Giants this year are nearly as bad. On third and ones defensively, the Giants have allowed 100% completions on them on third and ones. The league average, again, is 67%. So they are worse than the league offensively on third and ones, worse than the league defensively on third and ones. So you're right. Sometimes it is a matter of trying to gain that one extra yard.
Right. Yeah, and
that's crazy. You know,
that is crazy.
It really is. You know, I also like to know how much time the other quarterbacks have had to throw the ball when they
Well, in fairness, Robert, I mean, if you go around the league and they do this a lot on the broadcast, they'll time – I mean, guys like Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, they get rid of the football very quickly. So I don't know if that is a main factor as to why the Giants
dependent
yeah,
too,
are
yeah.
1-6. You know, you have a lot of offenses in terms of their strategy is the guys run certain routes. The timing is the way it is that Brady and Ryan and all these other guys, they just have to get rid of the football quickly, and it's not necessarily a reflection of the offensive line.
And then other guys, like other quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers or Russell, well, you know, Russell Wilson is a bad offensive line. But, you know, some of these quarterbacks hold and scramble to try to create things doesn't necessarily mean it's the offensive line's poor. You know what I mean?
Right, right. But I think it's more than a coincidence that the one game we won is when JPP had his best game, his
That's
only
good
game, where he had 3 sacks. And,
yeah. Well, Robert, we agree. Thanks for the call, by the way. Appreciate it.
On top of that, I mean, certainly JPP had his statement statistic game. I'll give you that. They also ran the football better than they had in recent games. And the third thing that went right is they had 3 takeaways. Whereas, you know what they had in the previous 5 games combined? They had 3 takeaways. Whereas they had 3 takeaways in the Broncos game alone. So I think JPP's a part of that discussion, but it's still a very small – there were a lot of things that went right for the Giants in that game. And also I think they got Denver at a time where they had so many injuries, the Giants, and you just didn't know what the offensive philosophy was going to be. A lot of things fell perfectly into place. The Giants executed, but it was, to me – far more than just JPP getting 3 sacks in that game.
Hey, look, and I know sacks is a flawed statistic, and things like pressure are nearly as important as sacks a lot of the times in terms of disrupting an offense and things of that nature. But, I mean, look, Lance, this is hard to ignore. The Giants have just 13 sacks this year in 7 games. 13. Only 5 teams have fewer sacks than the Giants. The Packers have 12. The Raiders have 12. The Jets and Titans both have 11. And the Bucs have just 7. To give you an example, The Jaguars lead the league with 33 sacks.
Oh, great. I think they've had two games where they've had 10 sacks.
But fine, I'll go down the list. The Panthers have 27. The Chargers, 26. Do you consider the Steelers or the Dallas Cowboys to have premier pass rushes?
DeMarcus Lawrence.
The Steelers have 26 sacks. The Cowboys have 25. The Bears have 23. Name the premier pass rusher on the Bears that strikes the
Leonard
fear.
Leonard Floyd.
In you.
I mean, that would be the one
That's
guy
it.
That I would name.
So,
yeah.
I mean, they have 10 more sacks than the Giants do. I mean, Olivier Vernon's injury has a lot to do with that. JPP was dealing with the shoulder injury, a lot to do with it. I'm not trying to, you know, say, oh, it's the defensive line's fault. There are reasons for everything. I'm not making excuses, but it's just another factor defensively and probably another factor of why they're not forcing as many takeaways this year. It's hard.
Of course.
What causes takeaways?
Pressure
on the quarterback.
No, I hear you. And I wasn't trying to downgrade the numbers. I just noticed Jacksonville has had one of those free games where they collect half their sacks.
I think they've 13
contest.
Sacks in one game or 11.
Well, they certainly had
double digits. Yeah.
I believe they've had a pair of 10-sack games, if memory serves.
That was the Baltimore game in London, right, when they had all those sacks?
They had. And then I think they had one. Did they have one against Tennessee, I think, right at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, that was when Calais Campbell had, like, the game of the century.
Yeah,
had, like,
I mean, it's
sacks.
One of those insane. I mean, Calais Campbell, I know entering this weekend, was leading the NFL in sacks. And Calais Campbell's a solid player, but he's not the first guy that would come to mind that you would be thinking would be leading the NFL in sacks. Now, the reason why I keep bringing up 2016 is because I think it's fair to compare, John, because the defensive personnel hasn't changed much. If we were comparing 2015 and 2016, defense completely changed. Correct. I don't think looking back at those numbers helps this conversation. So if you just want to get an idea, okay, through the first seven games last season, the Giants had 9 sacks. So they have 13 this year. What they did last year is, if you remember, the sacks came alive in the second half of the season. Just like the takeaways, by the way, came through in the second half of the season. The Giants finished with 35 sacks last year. They were middle of the pack. They were tied for 14th in the NFL. So they're at 13 right now. Can they get to 35 this year? Is that feasible?
Here's the thing, though. And I get it. I'm not trying to downgrade what they did last year.
I think you're going to make a valid point.
But 14 of those sacks in the second half came against the Browns, the Bears, and to a lesser extent Cincinnati. So I'll take Cincinnati was an okay team. They're an they're a below average team, but
lost more of their offensive line.
They have Andy Dalton. They have a real offense. But 11 of those sacks came against the Bears and the Browns
in back to back games, by the way.
Right,
too.
Who clearly had a lot of quarterback issues.
I'll give you that.
You don't see many teams with quarterback issues spare the 49ers showing up on the Giants' schedule in the second half of the year.
No, I think that's fine to bring up the fact that you got to look at the caliber of the opposition. You know, the rest of the second half of the season, I would say the sacks were scattered.
Three versus Dallas, four versus Washington. That's good. Sure.
But overall, they weren't necessarily getting 11 sacks combined in two straight games consistently over the course of the season. And there were a few games where they also had zero sacks. I mean, I'm looking at the chart. There were three games last year where they had no sacks.
But again, pressure. I mean, you felt like they were pressuring the quarterback a lot more last year. You know what I mean? And it's just, I think it's just winning the battle up front. And that goes back to the running defense too, right, Lance? I mean, this is the defense last year compared to this year. And we'll get back to the phones in a second. And I did offense-defense splits here. So last year, the offense averaged 19 points per game. This year, they're down to 16, okay? And they're gaining about 35 fewer yards per game. Defense gave up just under 18 points last year. They're only giving up just over 22 points per game this year, and they're giving up about 40 more yards. So both the offense and the defense moved in the wrong direction. And I don't think people, you know, the offense is hard to tell how much of that, you know, was impacted in the last couple games when Odell Beckham Jr. wasn't there, and it's tougher, I get it. But I think people expected the offense to improve a little bit. It hasn't done that. It's slid back the other way a little bit. Again, I think a lot of that's the injuries. And then the defense, I don't think anybody expected them to slide down almost, you know, 2 field goals per game and 40 yards per game. I don't think anybody expected that. I know I certainly didn't.
No, I think that it's extremely surprising what happened. The one thing I do want to throw out, and I'm curious the viewer's perspective, your perspective, when we say the injuries and we're going to look back at this season, I think it's going to be hard to maybe make sense of the numbers or say that the numbers reflect the offense when you lose Brandon Marshall, you lose Odell Beckham, you lose Sterling Shepard for a few games. With that being said, though, John, they were on the field for the Cowboys game.
Yep.
They were on the field for the Lions game.
Yep.
Now, the offense did start to break out of its shell against Philly, against Tampa Bay, against the Chargers.
They scored 20 points
Correct.
In 3 straight games.
So you got a glimpse of, all right, this team is capable of putting up points, but is it fair? This is more of a debate. Is it fair if people then were to counter your point and say, but John, there were games where everybody was fully healthy before the injuries happened and the offense wasn't necessarily living up to expectations.
Yeah, and I
is
guess
that a fair point to make?
It is a fair point, but my counter-argument would be that's a small sample size and even the best offenses will go through a couple games. I mean, look at the Steelers. They had two or three games this year where they
fluctuates.
Were brutal. They were terrible. Ben Roethlisberger says after
the
game,
Le'Veon Bell was like a no-show.
Maybe I don't have it anymore. You know what I mean? It happens. So, yeah, it's a fair argument. But I think without having given them time to get better, but I think it goes to a larger point, Lance, that when you evaluate at the end of the year, you're almost doing two separate evaluations. You're doing your evaluation pre-MASH unit at wide receiver and post-MASH unit wide receiver. And I think you're evaluating those two parts of the schedules in different ways a little bit.
You have to.
And I think that's going to be a very, very tricky thing for everybody when they evaluate what happened this year. I'm trying to evaluate this team. But I think it is fair to say in general that this team this year has suffered far more injuries than probably last year's team did the entire season. I mean, Olivier Vernon, Odell Beckham, Shepard.
Marshall.
Landon Collins has been playing through an injury. I mean, do you really think in a game where Landon Collins records zero tackles that he's 100% healthy? It's no way. No way. Dominic Rogers Cromartie with his issues, the off the field stuff.
Yep.
You know, not an injury, but he still wasn't on the field. So that's game and time missed for a player.
BJ
the offensive
Goodson.
Line shuffling too. BJ Goodson has missed games. That's another
Who
good
was supposed
one.
Supposed to be the middle linebacker consistently.
So yeah. I mean, I know next man up and all that stuff, but again, I'll say what I say all the time. There's a reason he's the next man. He's not the man. He's the next
That's
man.
That's why you have a depth chart, yeah.
Correct.
You have guys ranked 1, 2, 3, and so forth. If they were even, you'd put 1A and 1B. It's not necessarily like that in the NFL. And in fairness, John, you know, there were players that stepped up last year. But just like we were just talking about the offense not performing up to expectations in the first two games and it's a small sample size, you know, I remember Romeo Okwara. Remember he filled in for JPP in the Dallas game?
Great game against Dallas.
Solid performance, right? So, you know, people are saying to themselves, all right, hey, maybe the Giants found another undrafted kid who's making a name for himself. But then when you need it to happen over the course of 5-6 games when Vernon and JPP are banged up and you're not getting that Dallas type of production – I'm not saying you're not getting the effort. You're just not getting a sack from him every game. You're not getting 5 or 6 tackles. That's what I mean by production. It's hard to then go back and say, well, you know, see, he did it in the Dallas game. Because like anything else, you need at least half a season to say, you know what? When we put this guy out there, that's what we're going to get from him. I'm talking about a defensive lineman. I'm talking about a corner. I'm talking about a wide receiver. You can't just say, oh, well, when, you know, we randomly put this player in, they didn't miss the starter. Yeah, one game, it could work for a lot of guys. Can it work, though, for 5 or 6 games? That's the big question mark.
It's funny you say that. And, you know, I told you 2 weeks ago I had all the Adrian Peterson fans yelling at me for calling him washed up after that one game.
That well, huge game, yeah.
How did he do in the second game, by the way, with his 10 carries and 20 yards? Anybody can do something for one game. And, again, Adrian Peterson might have a good year the rest of the year, and I hope he does. I have nothing against Adrian Peterson. But don't overreact to one game. And I'll even say the same thing. Don't overreact to Deshaun Watson. I mean, look, I think obviously his future is super bright, and I take him as the franchise quarterback on my team any day of the week. You got to love what you've seen so far. Still a small sample size.
Well, and I think you bring up a good point because I'll bring it back to the Giants conversation. What did we talk a whole lot about this offseason? That Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz could potentially have sophomore slumps.
Yeah, how's that working out?
People were not saying don't crown them after a 16-game slate. Okay, fine. Nobody's crowning them. But now that you see them into their second seasons and the production is respectable at least, I think it's
Carson
fair to
Wentz
say,
more than that.
Correct. But I think it's now fair to say we've seen enough to say that, hey, this player is going to produce that way and help his team win games. Deshaun Watson, marvelous numbers, has taken the league by storm, but he's only got half a season under his belt. So, you know, at this time next year, then I think we're going to get a good taste of what Deshaun Watson is from a consistency standpoint.
Final call of the show. Ken in New Jersey. He's up next, even the second half of the year, too. Go ahead, Ken. What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? I'll make it quick. I bought into the hype, too. This season's been atrocious. I'm disgusted. But how can you not? You know, Paul said that Paul had me convinced that Rhett Ellison was going to help out the line. So was DJ Fluker, and DJ Fluker has a little bit, but I was concerned about the line. But who didn't think that if we were able to score, you know, 25, 26 points a game last year, who didn't think by adding Brandon Marshall and Evan Engram that that wasn't going to go up?
Ken, I mean, look, Ken, we were fooled too. Look, I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think, you know, you looked at what you had on paper. Games aren't won on paper. You looked at the results last year, and there was no reason to think that the team couldn't repeat what they did last year. But, I mean, I think
the only thing that concerned me was we were playing a winning record this year. That's what concerned me. We were playing a lot of tough teams, four teams after their bye.
The schedule was tough.
The schedule was tough, but here's the one thing I will say. You can't judge, and I'm not saying that you're making this point, Ken, but I hate in the offseason.
It's one of your pet peeves.
Oh, it's one of the things, just like quarterback records.
I do it. Win, loss, win, loss.
Yeah, well I'm getting, you're alluding to my point, but my point is you can't judge an upcoming schedule based on wins and losses of teams of what they did the previous year.
Like, who would have thought the Rams were going to be 5-2?
Exactly. I mean, if you were to speculate with your win-loss game, Ken, you probably would have said, all right, the Rams are going to be like a 500 average team again like they've been. Jared Goff is not going to, excel, so therefore we're going to give the Giants a win. And to me, it's pointless because then you get seven games into the season, the Rams are one of the best teams in the NFL. So that's more of a reason why I don't look at, last year's schedule appeared to be easy. You don't know until you see the first half of the season how good or bad teams are going to be.
Yeah. Do you guys know Vic DiPietro? He's a Jersey guy. He does like a
the comedian.
I have
seen a few of his things. They are quite comical.
I'm telling you, he's making it a little easier on us because he's saying what we all feel.
He
made an analogy the other day that was hilarious. And it's perfect for this season and how it went down. It's basically for after we lost all our wide receivers to injury and all that stuff. He says it's like driving in your car and thinking you have to fart, but then you poop yourself. And you're on the turnpike. And you're on the turnpike, and there's really nothing you could do about it besides sit in that poop for the rest of the ride. And that's pretty much what we're doing for the rest of the season. That's all I got, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ken. That was colorful.
I thought you may have seen one of them around the social media. He's a comedian.
I have not.
He's clearly a Giants fan. Mm-hmm. So after every game, I mean, I don't watch them religiously. I've seen a few here or there. He's been doing this for a variety of seasons.
Well, I will say this. If you're on the turnpike and you're like 8 miles between exits or like 15 miles between exits and you got something you need to do, just like the football season, you got to get to the end. You got to get to the exit.
Yes.
You can't exit early.
No. You got to go through the motion or whatever gets you through it. We'll leave it at that. So anyway, he does skits after every game.
Okay.
Depending on how the team performs.
Was he the guy that did the Coughlin impersonation a couple years ago? Or is that somebody different?
He may have been. I mean, like I said, he's been doing it for the last few years.
Okay.
It didn't start just when Ben McAdoo took over as head coach.
Okay.
He did it when Coughlin was the head coach too. So it could have been the skit that you saw. But it's usually just him talking into the camera, dressing up in Giants paraphernalia and just having a good time. So it's comical.
Is it filmed in Paul DeTino's basement?
Well, I would not put that past him, perhaps, if DeTino is opening up his domain.
Which he would not.
Which I don't think he would, but if there's anybody that may have some Giants background in the basement, I would think it would be Paul DeTino.
All right, folks, we'll have shows the rest of the week, of course. I'm back with Feagles on Friday. Lance is back on Thursday. Is that correct?
You are correct.
With Paulie DeTino?
You got it.
So make sure you stay tuned throughout the week. I'm trying to get Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus to join us on Friday, give us a little Giants at the bye week progress report. So make sure you tune in for that. For Lance Benoit, I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a good one, everybody.
Have a good one.